On December 9, 1939, Harold Leopold, 31, switched on his radio in Colorado Canyon City State Prison death row and heard the final chapter of Hollywood Cherry, the current I Love a Mystery serial. 2.5 hours later, according to the Denver Post story, he was led to the gas chamber saying, "It was great. I got the final solution to the story just in time. I Love a Mystery is my favorite radio program." Leopold died for the murder of a Denver restaurant proprietor.
That's Carlton E. Morris, creator of I Love a Mystery, reading one of the news clippings, one of about a million news clippings, I would say, that you have gathered over the years for I Love a Mystery and One Man's Family. People really turned on to your radio effort, didn't they?
They really did, and I'm awfully glad that I got in first on these things, because it's terrible competition these days. I'm just as glad to be out of it.
Well, now, you had done so much with the family, One Man's Family, and the real solid kind of a family life show. When did you turn to writing the adventure and the mystery of I Love a Mystery?
Well, in 1939, we had been on,
About 7 years on the One Man Family?
Yeah, about 7 years on with the family. And I suddenly began to feel that this was too much. I needed something besides the family, and it wasn't that I wanted to give the family up, but I wanted to be free for a few hours with something else. So when advertising agency suggested that they would like to see what I could do in the way of I Love a Mystery. They said, "Write 2 or 3 shows what you'd like to do and give us an outline." And so I chose 3 characters, Jack, Doc, and Reggie. I gave several titles. Among them was I Love a Mystery, which the agency selected. And they didn't even read the scripts. They just said, "Okay, well, we set up a date with NBC. It'll be 5 times a week." And
you mean just on the basis of the titles that you submitted and your credentials as a writer?
Well, of course. Yeah. I've been writing for them, for Standard Brand, for 5 or 6 years.
Were you employed by NBC or by Standard Brand, by the agency?
I was up to that point. Up to that point, and for quite a long time afterwards, I was on the NBC staff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, through sponsorship, I began to make so much more money than as a staff writer that I was released from the staff and depended on sponsors for money after that.
Well, it's traditional in radio that sponsors have more money than radio stations.
That's right.
Well, I Love a Mystery, then. They bought that, even though they had asked you to make write up a couple of shows.
Mm-hmm.
They bought it and put you on right off the bat.
Well, I think that I Love a Mystery was a wonderful title for a show. It would almost sell a show itself, and it did in this case.
What were the alternate titles? Can you remember the alternate titles you suggested?
I have the biggest idea.
Who cares?
I have the biggest idea of that. My original thinking was there would be no drinking. They wouldn't carry guns.
Mm-hmm.
They were what I had thought might be that they would solve situations for either individuals or a city, or and that they would have no headquarters, that they would go where the trouble was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And but I kind of got away from that as I got into it. You had to have more of a basis for around which activity.
Mm-hmm.
So while they finally settled down to the A1 Detective Agency.
And our heroes were...
They did travel a lot. Uh-huh. I mean, what I tried to do was to give a variety of color of places and situations. And that may sound funny on for radio.
Not at all.
But believe me, the listener's imagination is much more wonderful than any picture you can put on television. Mm. That's one of the things I was glad to get out of television. Because,
mm-hmm.
Faces get awful tiresome. And the same background gets awful tiresome. But if you can imagine the thing, a face never gets tired. I mean, we proved that with a family, 27 years. Anybody mm-hmm. could stand any show 27 years. that was what was in themselves, not what I gave them the lead, but they developed it in themselves.
Well, you and the listener were participants together. That's in One right. Man's Family and in I Love a Mystery as well.
That's right.
Because equal participation That's was right. very important to us.
That's right. Several times I have, at request, I've gone down to local schools down here and played some old I Love a Mystery shows for them,
mm-hmm.
and most of them had didn't know anything about radio because there was nothing on to attract their attention, really. These mm-hmm. days, radio is pretty hard, too.
Yeah.
When they've got to go in and turn on the television set and see everything. I would always start out by saying, now you've got two wonderful ears which can hear things, and you've got a wonderful imagination up here. So I suggest, while you're listening to this, close your eyes. Just let your ears and your imagination take over and see if you don't get a very interesting picture. And with a few exceptions, there's always... kids, you know, that do anything except what you tell them.
Yeah.
So, but in most cases, I got an immediate response. People weren't used to the radio, got all excited and interested in the thing. And I think that's I think television is the worst thing that's happened to this country as far as children are concerned. This was good. This idea of making yourself work with the show, it gave you a feeling of part of being a part of it. Whereas these pictures in front of a television show,
the kids today can't participate.
No, that's right.
Uh-huh. That's why radio could still be very
sure.
Big.
It's simply that the networks don't want. They don't want radio to take away any of the... And they could do it so much cheaper, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I said...
Well, let's get back to the great days of radio and I Love a Mystery. Now, you selected, as your three members of the A1 Detective Agency, Jack, Doc, and Reggie, people who had been very familiar to you, because I think each one of them had roles...
That's
at
right.
that time, and I love in One Man's Family.
Yeah, yeah. Mike Raffetto, Barton Yarborough, and
Walter Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And perhaps on my part, I was being a little bit lazy, really going out and getting new characters. But what the heck, if you've got the best voices, and why not use them?
Sure.
And
well, it's people you work with too, and they work with you, so right. You can you have an immediate rapport.
Well, not only that, but financially, it added to the hold that I had.
Uh-huh. On that. Well, what about now? You ran. You know, we didn't talk about. We were talking about One Man's Family before, and we didn't even talk about the books and chapters that you had set up. Were you writing chapter one, book one, right from the top?
Yeah.
And it was your thought that at the end of a book, that would be more or less the beginning of another story in the life of someone?
Yeah, well, I tried to, I had a feeling in reading a book, if you'd had a book this long and it wasn't broken up, it was good reading, but it would be an awful long time before you got to the end. But if you had, say, 13 episodes to a book, and the book came to a sort of climax, at least enough of a climax so that you felt that a story had been told, it would be easier to listen to you. It would give you a feeling of well, it's like building a house. There's so many windows here and so many doors there and so forth, and that all makes sense. And when the house is complete, there are 13 windows.
Well, you knew that you were going to achieve an end. This, of course, is one of the things that really set it just physically apart from any of the soap operas, because the soaps never ended. They just went on and on. Yet here you had... the listener was not aware of how many chapters there were going to be in your book, because it varied from book to book, I think.
That's right.
But at least by saying chapter 1 of book 27, it implied that this story that we're hearing now was going to come to a conclusion.
That's right. And also it gave background to things that had gone on, whether you heard it or not, things that had gone on with these people before.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, now, you did the same thing then with... incident, that was very unique. I don't think anyone ever used that kind of a chapter and book situation in any other radio or television or motion picture or anything like that.
I don't
think
so. Yeah.
But the I Love a Mystery now, we did the same thing. We had the Temple of the Vampires and the thing that cried in the night. Hollywood Cherry, you mentioned that before when we were reading the clipping about the prisoner who... He heard the end of that episode of that story. Now he could go to meet his maker.
That's right.
You had that pretty much the same way too, with maybe only a single chapter or two as a transition.
That's right.
And then they would jump back and refer to something that had happened before. But this was really exciting radio, and that came on late at night, didn't it?
Well, I don't know when it originally. Did you hear the original Hollywood?
I'm mostly familiar with the later version from the.
Well, I don't know what the timing was on that, because I was back and forth in New York and doing television, so I didn't follow that as closely. I mean, I directed a great many of those shows, and.
Well, the first series, though, from when was it? From 39 through 44, they were on at one time or other on each of the three major networks too.
Yeah,
it bounced from NBC to CBS, and then I guess it was even Mutual there back in.
Well, that was our second time was Mutual. I did it for Mutual.
What about that? Now here you had a successful series. I Love a Mystery ran for 4 or 5 years. Around 1939 to 44. And it was off the air for maybe 3 or 4 years. It came back again, basically the same stories.
Yeah, right? They all were the same stories. Well, it was 10 years.
There was 10-year difference?
I believe
From the beginning of the, I think the second series, my notes say the second series ran from about 49 to 52.
Yeah, well, the first one started in 39.
39, yeah, to
so
44.
10 years.
From the beginning of the first to the beginning of the second.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I don't think I get your question.
No, I was going to say, why did you do it again? Why did you do it a second time?
Money.
That's a good answer.
Sure.
They came to you and said, we'd like you to do this
again.
Yeah,
we'll give you $1,000 a week for the, and pay the cash for a second, for a rerun. It was very good for them. They, mm-hmm. I mean, they made
it was easy for you because you apparently some things had
to
be
updated. What I did was, you see, on NBC for a while we did half-hour shows,
mm-hmm.
Quite a few of them, and I broke those all down into 15 minutes, so everything was 15 minutes mm-hmm. For them.
For Mutual,
yeah.
In the second one. Tony Randall was in that. And,
that's right.
Russell Thurston, who was part of the one-man family scene,
that's
and
right.
Jim Bowles. Was Jim in the one-man family cast?
He was in the television.
The TV.
Uh-huh. Back in New York. Mm-hmm. He was.
And you used Mercedes McCambridge a lot.
Oh, very, very much, yes. Both out here in Hollywood and mm-hmm. in New York. Yes.
She was always the weeper, the screamer, the,
terrorized
young lady.
Yeah. She was an amazing girl. She was one of the most diversified actresses. She didn't sound always like Mercedes McCambridge,
uh-huh.
believe me.
You had the Carlton E. Moore style of writing mystery shows is legendary in the history of radio, mm-hmm. especially as it relates to your use of descriptive material in the script for the actors.
Yeah.
You used to write all kinds of special information, I guess, for the writer, for the actor to read in order to help him deliver his line.
That's right.
Now, what kind of a setting was it? What did you?
Well, that
you
was it had to. you had to know where the actor was, so that his action fitted into his background, and he had to carry the scenery load. Long with his characterization, and it had to be in the form of his character that he was doing this. For instance, when I think a wonderful scene on the fear that crept like a cat. they were up in they were on a small boat, and it was wrecked up in Puget Sound, and here they were. In the sound, mid sound, and trying to keep afloat and so forth, and I let Doc his comedy about swimming around in the nude, and he got onto the story of when he and his little girl cousin Winnie Mae used to go swimming in the hog pond in Texas, wear gunny sack bathing suits, a pure comedy, and yet he set all the water that was the scene that was necessary. That it was so well in the public's mind that he'll go on and carry on. The conversation about getting out and who the hell had run down and all that sort of thing, without having to keep refer to that you were swimming or trying to.
That was amazing. So I think the director and the writer merged together. You had done all the directing, and in your writing, you're giving direction,
that's
telling
right.
how to
That's right.
To see that. I have to look at your scripts to see some more of that.
Sure. And another funny one was the Temple of Vampires. They were the priests in the temple swang across 200 or 300 feet, swung across the from ledge to ledge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Doc was on one side, one ledge on one side of the temple, on a rope, and Jack was on another rope on the other ledge. Without knowing that the other was coming, they swang together, and the rope twisted up, and they, here they were, 50 feet from the ground, 75 feet to where the ropes were tied, and here they were just hanging there, and they had to climb up these ropes. And puffing and so forth, to the point where Barton Yarborough almost fainted. We had to stop. Well, it was at a rehearsal, and we had to stop and let him get his breath back.
You see, now, something like that could never have been done on television.
No.
You know, that's the beauty of the imagination being involved in it, you know. And here the actors obviously got caught up in this thing.
That's right.
I'm sure the actors looked at anything that they did for you as much more than just a job. I know you know, like the family. I mean, these people really, they took on the characters.
They those old days, you had time not only to be thoroughly rehearsed, but you had time to be sociable. So everybody, it was kind of fun to come down to the studio because you're going to, like going to the club and playing golf or someplace else. So these are things that very few people in their business life can do. So the making of good money and a happy relationship is out of this world. You can't buy that.
Well, you've made some good friends with the radio audience over the years, too. They really enjoyed your material. Now, you did other things, too, besides One Man's Family and I Love a Mystery. Now, you had a series with Barry Fitzgerald for
His Honor the Barber, yeah. That, unfortunately, only lasted about 9 months because the Irish were, I don't know to this day what he was or where he was in the situation in Ireland, but I do know that the Irish came down in Boston and threw rocks at the radio station.
Really?
And scared the hell out of the sponsor. And so...
Well, Barry Fitzgerald played a barber, and he was a judge or something, wasn't he? A small-town barber. And here's the barber coming in there again. It's very interesting.
Yeah. But I don't know.
That's interesting.
I think it was excellent. I hope this is going to be edited.
I'm sorry. Don't worry. No, it was a good series.
Yeah.
Now, you wrote a series for Mercedes McCambridge, too, didn't you?
Yes, called Family Skeleton. Family Skeleton.
And what was that about? Was that a mystery?
It was it was in a hometown setting up in... the northwest, west someplace, and it was a kind of a spy story.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big airplane factory near the place, and supposedly the Russians were either trying to get information or blow up the factory or something like that. And Mercedes was a small town teacher in the school, and her father had been a district attorney at one time. He was kind of a person of importance. Well, a stranger came into town, and she fell in love with him. And suddenly, he had to get out of town. And you, knowing the background of this thing, was he a spy or was he something else? But anyway, he took her along, eloped with her, and that was the beginning of her trouble. They went to an airplane finally, and he was taken aboard and went off towards Russia. So you didn't know what he just used her as an instrument for getting out or. It was a long involved story, but
well, most of the things that you did were long and involved, but they were done in such a way that the listener could clearly catch on, and even listening, picking up in One Man's Family. If you hadn't been around for six books, for example, you could pick up, and I mean, you'd have a question sometimes that it would refer to something that happened, but the stories were so interesting. And entertaining and exciting, especially in the case of I Love a Mystery, that it was all there in itself. And you did I Love Adventure, too, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I was going to... I did also a series, a syndicate series called Mysteries by Morse. And that was 52 half-hour... show. And they all
Was that Captain Friday? Is there a story about Captain Friday? I've heard something of that.
That was a series. And then the Adventures. I Love Adventure. I did that for I think I did 13 of them for ABC, using Jack Dawkins' radio. It was after the I Love a Mystery show.
After the second round
of
it. Did you have another version? We're broadcasting for listeners in Chicago. Didn't you have another version of a kind of a family story that was set on the North Shore in Chicago? Up in the Wilmette, Winnetka area, was it maybe?
Was that the Woman in My House?
Woman in My House, right.
Yeah, that was pure tragedy as far as I was concerned. I don't remember. I think this was while I was still doing the television shows. And an agency came to me and said, well, couldn't we do One Man's Family from the beginning with different names and a different locale and so forth? And I said, well, I don't see anything. Why not? But I said, that's going to mean that I'm going to have to get another writer and director to help me. Between the writer and the director, and I was so busy in New York, they didn't follow the One Man's Family story, although the show went on for 7 years.
The woman went on for 7 years.
Yeah, and paid good money, and I just hated everything. I couldn't bear to listen to it.
I have never heard that on one of those shows.
You'd miss nothing.
Well, people who didn't grow up with One Man's Family or with I Love a Mystery
or most of the good stuff that Carlton E. Morris created, missed something too.
Yeah, well, thank
I
you.
Would really say, and we wouldn't have missed this chance to come visit you in your home here, high above California, I guess.
Well, I hope I've given you what you wanted.
You've given us a chance to meet you, which is exactly what we want. And I want to thank you very much for all the good imaginative radio you've provided me and millions of radio listeners. Well, thank you, Mr. Morris.
Well, thank you very much.